Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atik Hamadbhati, a fourth-generation homeopath with over 20 years of professional experience in this field of healing. In the Homeopathy Health Show, I'll be talking all things homeopathy and natural, with guest interviews, tips and advice, and answering some of your questions. Homeopathy is truly a unique, complementary system of healing suitable for all ages, young and old. I'd love to hear from you and welcome your questions on homeopathy and how it can or has helped you. Feel free to email me at health@liketreatslike.co.uk or visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk for more information. Whilst you're there, take a look at the Knowledge Academy and blog section where you will find interesting information. Both sections are growing day by day, so always check back. So let's begin today's show on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio, real feel-good radio. Hi, how are you? I hope you're well. And of course, as always, I sincerely hope and pray it remains that way. So I do hope you've had an enjoyable week. It seems to go so fast, doesn't it? There's so much going on all the time. But it's all good, of course. Now, I had the pleasure of speaking with Hermann Kepler last week, and he's the founder and principal of the College of Naturopathic Medicine. So I do hope you were able to tune in. Remember, all episodes of the Homeopathy Health Show are available to download and stream on demand from ukhealthradio.com. And you can check out my socials, of course, at Like Treats Like across TikTok, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook to find out more information and also to keep up to date actually with upcoming episodes, because I am sending out short teaser trailers for the radio shows, which actually are receiving a lot of interest around the world. So that's always nice, isn't it? Now, this week I'm going to be speaking with Colin Griffith. And again, this was another fascinating conversation. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Colin Griffith. Colin studied homeopathy in 1989 in London and has been working as a homeopath in East Sussex and Kent since 1991. Beginning working from home and in a community hall in Tenterden in Kent, he built his practice over 20 years, treating patients and also teaching and lecturing on the subject. He is now a world-renowned homeopath, having travelled to the USA, Japan and Europe to lecture and treat patients. Colin has written several best-selling books on homeopathy, which have been distributed worldwide. Colin, welcome. Wonderful. Thrilled to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm thrilled to be here too. Lovely to talk about homeopathy.
It is, isn't it? It's the best subject in the world.
Well, it's never ending.
It is. Now, right off the mark, I have to say that I do have three of your books on my shelf. They are The Companion to Homeopathy and both volumes of The New Materia Medica. And you'll be happy to know that I refer to them quite often.
Okay.
And we will be actually talking later on about your upcoming book. So I'm look forward to some more details on that as well. Actually, I wanted to start, Colin, with asking you that before homeopathy and holistic therapies, You're in fact a classical music composer. So yes. Fascinating. I find that very, very fascinating. So tell us more.
It sounds fascinating. It sounds romantic. Actually, it was extremely frustrating. I started playing the piano when I was about seven years old. I found an old Broadway piano that nobody else wanted. And it was an amazing toy. I hardly needed toys after that. And over the years, I studied piano, and not very successfully, I have to say. And I eventually found a teacher of composition. And I found it as enveloping as homeopathy. At the time, of course, I never thought that there was anything else that I ever wanted to do or to be. The idea of standing in front of an ensemble or in front of an orchestra and hearing your own sounds, it's an extraordinary experience like no other I've ever had. But it's a very impractical way of life. And frankly, I knew that with four children, by that time I had four children, it's a dicey business. And there was a huge change, a sea change in the world of classical music at the time that I was beginning to write my scores. So I did have some performances. I had some recordings on the radio, and it seemed to be working quite well, but there was something missing. I didn't know what it was. I felt very frustrated, but also quite existentially worried. What was I doing wrong? Of course, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was just learning. I was practicing. I was just being a composer. But because I needed to make some money, I fell into homeopathy by mistake. I went to stay with a friend in London who was doing the same thing as I was. I was a teacher of English as a foreign language to keep the wolf from the door. I did that for about 6 years, and I got incredibly bored with it. I met lots of lovely people, but the actual teaching process drove me bonkers. Anyway, so I went to London, and this person I was staying with said, "What are you reading?" And I was reading a book on alternative medicine by Brian Inglis. And we'd started talking about homeopathy, and in the back there were names and addresses. And I said, "Well, what about it? You know, you are as dissatisfied with teaching as I am. What should we have a look?" And so all the information came to me, and I thought, okay, well, let's give it a go. I found myself in a hotel in London being interviewed for a place at the College of Homeopathy, which no longer exists, but it was the first of the big colleges. And Barbara Harwood and Robert Davidson were there with the principals. And they just simply said, "Well, although you're here for an interview, it's you who should interview us." I didn't really understand what was going on. I was fairly naive. And I ended up by saying, "Look, I've got to catch a train. So how much can I expect to earn at the end of the first year?" And Robert, bless his heart, gave me some impossible figure, which I actually believed, took it to the bank manager, and they paid for my course. That's how I started. And I've never looked back. The first week at the College of Homeopathy was just jaw-dropping. And I remember meeting my wife on the station when I got home. She came to fetch me, and she said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I am. I think I found what I want to do." And over the years, I realized that homeopathy is composing people. It's finding harmony in people. It's finding out what are their vibrations and how do they sound, metaphorically, how do they sound? Why are they a cracked bell today? And I have to say I've been entertained in the best possible sense of the word ever since by listening to people's difficult harmonies and thinking of it, or maybe not thinking of it, but feeling my way through homeopathy in that kind of musical analogy, has helped me a lot. So, yes, it's nice to be asked about composition, but it is my past.
You know, it's very eloquently put. You talk about harmonics and harmony and the different vibrations that we all have. And every individual, of course, is vibrating at his or her own frequency.
Very pleasant,
yes. We find nowadays, don't we, certainly within the 21st century, this connected world of technology, that we have become highly strung. And you know, it's a state of flux, and it's not good, is it? It's just not good for us. And we can't get away from technology because it's now part of life. But the damage that potentially is happening, which we're not going to perhaps realize now, but in the second or third generations after us, is a worry, isn't it?
It is. But I also think that we can continue the musical analogy in that the tempo of our modern world is much too fast.
Mm.
The rhythms of our modern world are far too difficult to, you know, when you think of rhythm in music, there is an inevitability of the connection with dance and movement. And somebody who is well in a very soric, solid, constitutional, grounded way, their rhythms are not that fast. Or if they are quick, quite naturally quick, that person is well if they can move and dance to them in an appropriate manner for their particular mission in life. So I am particularly worried about the effects of electromagnetic frequencies, of Wi-Fi, of technology in general. It's too speeding. It's like some conductors these days who, you know, they take well-known pieces at such a lick. Very exciting, but then you think, actually, I've just had a breathless time listening to that.
Mm.
I don't want anything too slow. You know, you don't have to be carbish about everything, but it is necessary to listen to the composer through his music. So, in other words, the patient through their natural speed.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I hope that isn't too highfalutin, but
you come across. I'm fascinated by what you're saying. Do you find that today, with like you said, everybody is at a fast tempo and everybody is highly strung, and you know, that's what I've certainly seen. Everybody is on edge, and it's not just because of various factors, but it's just to do with lifestyle. I mean, you start on a Monday, and before you know it, it's Sunday. And this 20 years back, you know, I used to have a really long day, a productive day. And now I have a long, productive day, but the days are just going by so, so fast. And it's such a worry.
Yes. Yes. You can't fit it all in.
Dare I say it, but technology seems to not have helped. I know there's so fantastic technology is fantastic.
Mm.
It's enabling us to communicate. It's done so much good. But there's always a flip side to everything. And the flip side is that we're so connected that it's actually difficult to disconnect for oneself. So no pun intended, but you have to make time for time to make time for time.
Exactly,
and,
so.
And that's a real worry, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Do you come across this quite often? Because you're speaking about tempo, and what's your take on this of how to slow things down? I mean, is there any way that we can slow things down, or is this just the norm, the new norm?
But I think that's what patients are coming for. It's one of the things that patients come to see us for. What they're coming to see us for is to a return to their true constitutional rhythm. And if they find that constitutional rhythm, you know, one patient may be at a completely different speed from another. I know people who are very driven, but it's very natural. But I know people who are very, very ponderously slow, but they so much prefer that and they get more done. So every individual, when we listen to them, what we need to do is find out what it is that or how they get back to the natural rhythms of themselves. Often this is complicated I'm sure all your homeopathic speakers would say this. It's complicated by miasmatic inheritance. It's complicated by circumstance, current circumstances. Not always is it possible to change those. But to help people to find their rhythm within their complicated situations and at the same time address miasmatic history, which is, of course, another type of rhythm, that to me is what my job is all about. When we learn homeopathy, we're often, when we start, don't we? We start with like treats like is cure. But yeah. I'm not so interested in cure. It sounds heretical, but cure is that's the destination. But I don't think people can reach their destination unless they do the journey. So I'm very happy when they come and tell me they're cured, but I sort of almost don't believe it. It's nice when I can. But people have long journeys to make. Not so much with children, but certainly people who come to see us in their 40s, 50s, 60s, there's such a lot of tapestry to go through.
It is very complex. It is very, very complex. You're absolutely right. We have become very complex, haven't we, with, like you mentioned, electromagnetic frequencies, the lifestyles that we live, frustrations, even joy and happiness. But sometimes even that can, you know, backfire.
Yeah.
You can't laugh all the time because then you cannot take things seriously. If you're very serious, then, of course, you know, that means there's possibly, dare I say, you know, a lack of joy. That may exist. Family structures are so complex nowadays, aren't they?
And they're very, very complex. Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we, I'm sure you've experienced this, where the mobile is ringing and you just can't answer it for whatever reason. And it actually upsets the other person. Oh, you didn't answer my phone. And I remember, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, when I used to have the old phones, of course, like we all did. And, if you didn't answer the phone, you didn't answer the phone. But nowadays, it can become a means of argument, a real argument. You know, people have, couples have broken up because of it, that someone didn't answer the phone.
Yes.
But nobody thinks about the real reality of it, that you could be in the car, you could be having a shower, you know, could be taking a nap. And that's what I was referring to.
Like me, people now know that I don't answer the phone. So I don't get that argument. I loathe mobile phones. I will use them. In fact, I find them very useful for WhatsApp sessions when I treat people abroad. But as a means of communication, I won't do it.
Well, I'm pleased that you answered my WhatsApp messages. So thank you for that. I'm no chuffed problem. To bits about that. Now, I wanted to move on to something very interesting, an interesting part of your life as well, which was to do with post-graduation of homeopathy. Do you go into actual practice immediately after, or was there a time where you perhaps sort of thought about going into practice? And
No, I went straight into practice. It was a curious kind of time. It was very odd, in fact, because in the College of Homeopathy, there was a three-year full-time course, and it was supposed to finish in June, but actually the course ran out of steam. We started with 34 students and we ended up with 7 actually graduating. So the attrition rate for students was enormous. And I have noticed this happening, that lots of people start off with enthusiasm. And I do think that homeopathy has got to be a vocation. It's almost as if we have to be called to do it. And I don't think there's anything special in that. It's like any other vocation. And when our course finished, I was faced with having to write a thesis, and this thesis was going to be about 35,000 words, and it would be marked and read and put in a box and never seen again. And frankly, I wasn't prepared to do that because, you know, with 4 children and lots of other things going on, I still was writing music at that time. I just didn't feel I had the resources, internal resources, to do a thing like that. So I asked the powers that were at the college, could I please start up a clinic, a drop-in clinic in my local town, and present 10 cases which are supervised by a homeopath of my choice and that you agree to. So the college said, yes, but we have to have a 10-point plan. And it included insurance. It included the mentorism, you know, with I actually chose Kate Diamantopoulou, the late Kate Diamantopoulou, to support me. And I did have a friend who helped me to start with. She then emigrated to New Zealand. So it was after a while, it was me on my own. And we had this village hall and we stayed open every Friday afternoon with absolutely nothing to do. The doors were open, but nobody knew about us until week six. A very, very charming lady came, put her head round the door and said, "Oh, are you open?" And we practically ran at her and said, "Yes, of course we are." It turned out that her son had measles. But she said, "Oh, no, I think he's got mumps. The doctor thinks it's measles, but I think it's mumps."
Right.
And I said, "Well, he can't have both. He must have one or the other." Anyway, we treated him with the appropriate remedies, and it turned out he had measles. But straight away after that, he had mumps, literally. Within a day of the measles rash going, he started mumps. So this was an introduction to me of the activity of practice. It was hectic after that. And suddenly we had an influx of patients to the extent that within a year we had four tables with different homeopaths, and it was humming every Friday afternoon. So that was an enormous learning experience, because we had to think on our feet. We didn't have time. We just had to get on with it. And I'm sure we made terrible blunders, but everyone was very forgiving. And it ran for 11 years.
Wow, that's a really healthy, productive time, isn't it?
It was fantastic. And I learned homeopathy at speed, having just talked about speed being a bad thing. Actually, you know, I had lots of first aid books next to the telephone, and somebody would ring up and I'd say, "Give me 5 minutes, I'll ring you back." And that's all I had, because the phone would ring again.
Mm.
So it was extraordinary. I had the energy to do that then. So that was my post-grad effort.
I think being in the deep end with homeopathy is just, it's just fascinating, because my uncle practiced homeopathy in Nairobi in East Africa.
Yeah.
And I visited him several times. Sadly, he's passed away now. But he had a very large practice there. And it was, I can just imagine, as you were sharing, you know, the situation in the hall, it was like that. And it was, you know, the bell would ring, the phone would ring, the mobile would ring, and then the bell outside would ring again. And yeah, it would just carry on. And I was thinking, because he was running left, right, and, you know, back there, consulting with the patient, coming back, making the remedies, and the phone would ring and someone would ask something else. And but it was almost graceful, because it was an opportunity to serve humanity. But the education, the knowledge that, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this, the knowledge that can be gained, I gained so much just by observation. Yes. on how to be able to actually manage that, let alone the remedies and the books, but yeah, how to actually manage that. And
yeah,
what I learned was take a deep breath and smile,
yeah,
and just be grateful that somebody has asked for your help,
yeah,
and that, yeah, you can actually help, God willing, you know, you can help them back, yes, with something, you know.
Yes, yes, it's true. I think I was also helped by the fact that I am without doubt an absolute sucker for stories.
Right.
I absolutely love hearing stories, and for me, a patient is telling me a story every time they come. Some of them are not terribly happy stories, of course, but watching a story unfold and then move into a different phase, a better phase, one hopes, that really keeps me going, even to this day. You know, 33 years later, it keeps me going today.
You know, that's very interesting, because one of the things that I always say, and I've said it on the show, and I was speaking to Herman Kepler and Camilla Sherrer, and I mentioned the same things, is that every single individual on this planet has a story to tell.
Yep.
It just needs us to listen.
Yep.
And like you said, good or bad, but everybody has a story. And I don't think I've ever left any conversation, even if it's been 2 minutes, where I haven't actually learned something. You know, you often see these videos, these short videos nowadays are on social media. There's some very, very positive ones where someone's asked about, you know, what's your observation on life, or what's the life lesson, you know, share that with us. And you find out these things from people and they really make you ponder and dwell. And in fact, the majority of them are so humbling that you think, wow, you know, we're okay. You know, everything is okay.
Yes.
We just have to pull our socks up. We have to do the right thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's where homeopathy comes in, because serving humanity, that's what homeopathy is. It's a service to humanity, hearing, having that compassion, the compassion actually that Dr. Samuel Hahnemann had all those years ago. And that compassion, without compassion, it's very difficult, I think, to become a healer, because the fact that you can help somebody, and when that call comes back saying, I'm really well, thank you. Mm. And it's not because of an ego. It's just humbling, isn't it? Because you think, that's so nice that someone can get on with their life. They're not bogged down with this dis-ease and the situation that they're in, you know, where perhaps others have let them down, of course.
Yes, yes.
I just find that fascinating. And that really keeps, you know, drives me in. And what you've said, I love that story and that real example of 11 years of this practice. And it's that patience that you observed, isn't it, in the first few weeks.
Yeah.
And then it just went, you know.
Just took off. I opened it up again after I got very tired and closed it down at 11 years. When my son and my daughter decided to study homeopathy, I opened it up again.
Right.
And so I was doing less work and more just sort of, I don't like the word supervising, but sort of mentoring. They were taking cases and I was sort of standing in the background. And that ran for 3 years until they decided what they wanted to do with it. But I learned from all of it, all of it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You've also been involved, Colin, with, you're actually a founding member of the Guild of Homeopaths. And that's also something quite interesting. Please do share with us how you became involved and the thought process behind that.
Oh, that's very simple. Janice McAuliffe is an extraordinary homeopath. She's the homeopath I choose to see. And I would say that her, I hope I'm not putting things in a box here, but her style of homeopathy really suits me. It's what I would term three-dimensional. So it's not your average classical one dose, wait 3 months. It's much more refined. No, that's not the right word. It's much more geared to an individual, his present circumstances, and the state of the parts of his body or her body. Mm. What do I mean? So she will look at a person's case as if, first of all, they're a constitution. They are a soul within that constitutional state, that there are emotions at play, and that all of this is happening in a body that may, in some aspect or other, be failing. Obviously not all, because, you know, the patient's just walked in, but perhaps an organ is weaker than the rest of the body, or a chakra, an energy center, is weaker than the rest of the body. So this is a person who chooses to use remedies to support parts that are weaker, that if she only gave a constitutional remedy, then the weaker part, either an organ or a chakra, would slow down or even pull back on the rate of cure that would be achievable. So in other words, she will use a constitutional remedy, and underneath she will use support and drainage remedies.
Right.
She will also use remedies that are specific to chakras, energy centers. Because this is the way she works, and because her pupils, I think she would argue with that word. She doesn't like the idea of teaching. Just people who, maybe a better word is an acolyte. We're followers of her thought processes. And there were a number of us all clamoring, saying to her, please, will you, you know, give us some tutorials? And she put us off, oh, no, that's not me at all. which was fine. But then eventually, we all got a call. Come to her house on Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning, and don't be late.
Right.
So we all foregathered with notebooks and pens, and we were going to sit at her feet. Oh no, we weren't. We were going to meditate for 4 hours. First of our meditation sessions. And this meditation session, as I said, it lasted 4 hours, and it was meant to be an individual healing practice through meditation. So she did meditations based on the ascending ladder, if you like, the ascending hierarchy of chakras in the body, the seven major ones and one or two others. So for 2 years, we practiced this meditative state every month, for every Friday, once a month. And we learnt enormous amounts about very simple things. She would do the base chakra, for example, and we would take sulfur as we meditated. Then we took calc carb. We took conium. We took, I think we took Fossac. We took various remedies, really well-known remedies. And the idea was that we were meditating to get out of this situation, our individual situations within the meditation, what we most needed, and learn, of course, what else there was to learn about those very famous remedies. This graduated after 2 years to doing remedies that we'd not heard of, for example, oak, and there were others as well. This became like a habit, and there were, I will evoke his name, the late, much lamented Martin Miles, was also part of our group. And he and Janice and various others, we foregathered in my garden in Sussex on a Sunday afternoon. And we just talked about what could come of this. And out of this grew the idea that in the medieval times, people would be apprenticed to, I don't like the word master, but be apprenticed to experienced people. And this apprenticeship could expand and expand and expand exponentially forever. And the person who gave us this word, the guild, was my mother. She said, oh, that sounds like the guild, the guilds of the past. So we adopted this word. Not everybody has liked what we did, what we were doing. And the word guild, I think, is a little off-putting because it slightly exclusifies what we were trying to do, which was a shame because actually we were trying to do the very reverse. But the idea was that we would start a year-long course for graduates who would want to do the same things. In other words, base their course, once a month course for 10 weeks on meditations and new medicines that we'd already begun to take and think about. No books were involved at that time. We didn't write any books then. And we found that there were actually too many people asking to come on the course. And it was a bad moment because we had to say no to some people, which was a really, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do. And the first year was so exciting for all of us that most of them, I think only two people, didn't go on to the second year. So this became a two-year course, and it became known as the Guild of Homeopaths. And it lasted for three two-year sessions. And out of it came all these new so-called new remedies and meditative provings. So it was an experience of bumbling around in the dark, really. What on earth are we doing? None of us were trained teachers of homeopathy. We weren't really interested in that. We just were interested in finding people who wanted to explore chakras, explore how chakras and miasms might work, explore how constitutions and drainage. Well, your listeners can just use their imaginations. It just opened everything up for us. And of course, with somebody like Martin Miles, who was a very, very experienced homeopath indeed, he just imparted so much extra knowledge. And it was he who really promoted the idea of working with or working using homeopathy to work with and on the thymus gland, which has become a central plank of something that really has interested me more than anything else, and that is ancestral energy and how it influences the patient in front of us. I always like to say that the thymus gland energy is a key to a door that leads to a corridor into the past. It's a way of us opening up things the patient wouldn't have any idea of explaining or describing, either because it's lost to their memory or because it's so painful, or because it's something that they never knew about, but their parents did. There's so much in the past that if we have patients who present us with problems that have roots in the past, there's no way we can avoid using the thymus gland energy. I think that this is very much part of the age we're living in, because in Hahnemann's day, I'm not sure that it would have been terribly useful to know about thymus gland. Hahnemann did the most extraordinary thing just by causing the inception of homeopathy as we know it today. Absolutely enormous, a prodigious exercise. And he was followed by people who expanded it and expanded it and expanded it. And today, where we're on the very cusp of leaving the age of Pisces and entering the age of Aquarius, which is such a different energy, such a different tempo, that we have to make that adaptation. To do it, we must deal with the past. We can't leave the past behind and be trapped in our own futures without a connection to what's caused so much damage.
Leads me on actually to the provings and the remedies themselves. How have you found them in practice as far as effectiveness is concerned, as far as them being current to, you know, the modern ailments that we end up suffering from?
Yes, this is a key question, because over the years, it's actually 30 years that we've been doing these meditative provings. Over those years, absolutely of necessity, you know, there are some we never use, probably because they're not quite in their time. We've stumbled across them before we're ready to use them, before we even have the sense that they're going to help us. However, the major remedies, the ones that you mentioned you've got the books on, there are two books already published and the next one's going to come out. So we've got 72 remedies, soon to be 108 remedies, which actually have really stamped their mark on the way we can help patients. All of them have a very extraordinary existential role to play. They aren't necessarily remedies like calc carb or sulfur, which are really basic, but most of them have this extraordinary ability to shift people out of some very specific forest of trouble and take them towards that place where they can start having remedies that, like calc carb and silica and phosphorus and sulfur, which are truly constitutional. And that's their value. I would never expect, let's say, oak or ruby. I would never expect those remedies to be, so to speak, the remedy. I don't believe in that. I'm not a classical enough homeopath to say anyone is one remedy. I can't do it. It doesn't sit well with me. It simplifies people far too much. I do think there are basic constitutions to which we all belong. And I think they are all mineral, which is, what, you know, the earth is made of mineral. And everything else comes out of mineral. And I do believe that a really well person needs to get back to their basic constitutional state. That's an absolute tenet of the homeopathic philosophy.
You know, I'm very interested with, you just mentioned mineral, and we know that because of over farming, of course, overproduction, the population of the world, the soil is so depleted of essential minerals and nutrients.
Yes.
So I'm very interested with what you've just said about this mineral element. Do you think there's any correlation there between you know, what with over farming and the fact of what we're eating is really, it's not your five a day anymore. It's not nutritious. You know, the nutrition is not there. The taste may be there, yes, but certainly that nutrition is not there.
But isn't this all part of the speed of the world? Isn't it all part of technology and money and putting materialistic things before anything else? We're not really, I should step back from what I was about to say. What I think we are born as, we're not born as material primarily. We are a soul in a physical body in order to be here. And so to concentrate so heavily on materialistic things, I think is a big problem. And what's happened is that big business, probably unwittingly over the years, become so big and so heavy duty and so fast and so all consuming that we've all gone along with it. And there's been less and less room for non-material things. We can see that in everyday life. Look what's happening to religion. Look what's happening to education. Everything is being, all standards are being lowered. Everything's being cheapened. Everything's going too fast. I also think there's an extra thing here, and that is that the people who live today have lived through in previous generations, but we have inherited a sense of shock and trauma through two world wars, through an extraordinary passage of history, the 20th century, which has been so marked by totalitarianism. I don't wish to get into politics, but simply that this whichever politics one has, one takes a different view of this. But nevertheless, this enormous bulk of arrogant, suppressive control, it's very difficult to lift one's head above it, to get fresh air, to feel that one is strong enough to be an individual within that. I find that patients who do best with homeopathy, who reward me with feeling better and being grateful for homeopathy, are the ones who find their individuality enhanced.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, I wanted to move actually on from the guild and talk to you about yourself being a lecturer. And I know that you do lecture at the Centre for Homeopathic Education in London. And of course, you have been around the world, as I mentioned in my intro, lecturing. So how is that? Tell me what you're involved with as far as lecturing, the subjects, and what motivates you to give back so much through education? Because education is the knowledge, isn't it? It's never going to change. Education is the key to success.
Well, I think there's a three-pronged answer here. One is I like telling stories as well as listening to them. And I am really entertained. Again, I don't mean that in any flippant way. I'm entertained by talking to people about what patients can achieve. And I actually prefer talking about patients who don't necessarily have success. I'm quite happy to talk about patients that are difficult. In fact, I do difficult case seminars where people come along and this case is impossible. I don't know what to do with it. And so we spend the time working out strategies. That's something I gained from the late Robert Davidson. He was a maverick and an extraordinary mind. And he had a prodigiously clever way of getting into difficult cases. And he probably influenced me the most in this. And I felt really strongly that if we can look at cases that seem to defy our best efforts, then we're facing, it's like facing the tsunami. You dive into the water and you don't get drowned. You run away from the tsunami and it drowns you. Mm. And so that's my first answer. The second aspect of this is that lecturing isn't for everybody, because lots of people find it nerve-wracking. And it was pointed out to me some time ago that on my astrological chart, I have the moon in Leo. And I said, so what? Oh, well, that's why you do your lecturing, said the astrologer. I said, what? Mm. Well, if you're a moon in Leo, then actually you're able to strut the stage and just talk to people. And I don't have nerves in front of 40 or 400 people, because I would if I were a musician. I would if I were a musician, definitely. I did a musician. But as a homeopath, because I was called, I felt called to being a homeopath, I don't feel the nerves, because I feel homeopathy will take me there. I feel the homeopathy needs to be explained. It needs to be aired. It needs to be heard. And I don't care how it achieves that. I'm just a conduit for it. I love doing that. So that's the second thing. The third thing is I don't lecture abroad anymore. I won't go to the States. I won't go to Japan. I've had my traveling. Once again, if I can evoke the astrology, I'm a Taurus. I like my fields with the gate closed. So the CHE, the Centre for Homeopathic Education, is ideal for me because it's in London and I'm not asked to go every month and I'm asked to do quite specialist things there. So I cover things like new remedies, but I also do ancestral trauma. It's such a big subject. It's so fascinating. It's so illuminating. I also do things like the lecture on the midline, which is the lecture about the spinal column and its role, its pivotal role in the health of the body and how we can read it. It's readable. And the energy that flows up and down it is readable. And for us to know how that's readable, it's liberating. So I do that kind of lecture as well. So I'm asked to do odd things.
What's coming up as far as your new books? What are you working on for the future?
Okay, so the next book that should be coming out, Watkins is publishing the third volume of the new Materia Medica, which is 36 new remedies that we've been developing over the last 5-10 years. And I am fascinated because when I look back, we didn't know we were doing this at the time, but when I look back over the three books, each book of 36 remedies has proved to be 36 remedies that are very relevant to what's going on at the time. And this last book, this last 36 remedies, not all of them, but many of them are really pertinent, really relevant to what has been going on in the last 3 years. Some of the remedies in this book have been extraordinary eye-openers. They're helping to release people from the thrall of treatments that they may have been obliged to or they chose to have that have proved to be less than ideal.
So these are 36 new remedies?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes. This is very, very interesting indeed. And I think you must send me the details and I will share them with the listeners of the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm looking forward to that very much, actually. And you must write about this midline, because I think your practical working knowledge on this, when it goes to paper, if it helps others, I think it's just brilliant, isn't it? If that can happen.
It's important for me. I think it's important for practice. Now I see my daughter working. She's not only taken on what I've been studying through cranial osteopathy, but she's added her own stuff. Bella is she does Chinese traditional medicine as part of her Shiatsu Qigong world. She's a teacher of those, and she's also a homeopath. And I find her, the way she talks about what I'm talking to you about, it's like, oh, but we should have known about this already because the Chinese knew about it. Mm. You see what I mean? So it's just tying up things that we should have learned about or was available to learn about. And now it's here.
Colin, I hope your book does come out in May or certainly during the summer months. And I hope that you will actually come back on the show later this year after the third volume of the new Materia Medica and speak about some of the key remedies and how they're applicable to us, you know, in this current year or the current years ahead of us.
I should be delighted.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much and stay safe. And I look forward to speaking to you again.
And the same to you all. Thank you.
And now it's time for reflection with poems of healing. This one is called I Am the Forest. The storm didn't sustain for days, nor the rain. The happiness is not forever, nor the pain. They are the visitors, will come and go. You are an ancient forest here, please know. Sadness will dry you, your tear will bring the rain. Still, you will remain here, unmoved and same. Rain will grow foliage on your being. The storm will try to destroy everything. Still, trust me, you are not a leaf. You are an ancient forest. Drought is seasoning you. Bushfire is cleaning you. Storm is sweeping you. Everyone is helping you the best. This poem was written by M.D. Feroz Alam, published in Sauti, Poems of Healing by the United Nations. I do hope you've enjoyed the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Tune in next time for more things homeopathy, interviews and segments on the healing possibilities that homeopathy can bring you. And don't forget to visit UK Health Radio online at www.ukhealthradio.com to see the many other amazing shows available to listen live and on demand. Or why not download the app from the iOS and Android stores. Until next time, stay safe and take care.